So I'd like us to try a repeating question with each other if you're up for this. And you can bow out if you want. And do this as a journaling practice on your own. But I find that this is quite rich if you do it with someone else, if you feel comfortable doing it. So a repeating question is sort of mining. You're asking, someone's going to be asking you a question over and over, and you're going to be answering it over and over. Most of you have probably done something like this. And the idea behind it is that it's actually like a journaling process, or it's like a deep dive into the conscious mind, into almost subconscious or the deeper meaning of things, like a reflection practice. It's very similar to a reflection practice. In that, the first few times we answer a question, it's kind of like the surface level. It's essentially like, when you greet someone, you say, "Hey, how are you?" And your answer is fine. And yet, maybe you're sick or you just broke up with your partner. But you say, "Fine, yeah, how are you?" And if they ask again, you might say, "Well, yeah, I'm doing okay." And then the more they ask, "Look, I'm really not doing it." I don't want to picture that one. So it's kind of like that. So we dig in, we dig in, we dig down, and it's revealing, and it's helpful in its reveal, because then we end up really knowing ourselves and more and more and more. So self-reflection, but it's also a sharing practice, so that we don't feel isolated in what we're feeling, that we can express ourselves to someone else and hear, really listen to someone else. So if you're up for that, then we'll pair up in twos, and then I'll describe the process a little bit more and give you the questions. And if you're not up for that, then just if you have a notebook or you need to get a piece of paper from somebody, you can do it that way. Okay? So just hook up with somebody. I shouldn't use that. Turn towards someone that looks close to you, that's close to you. It doesn't look like anything. And if you don't have a partner and you want one, raise your hand. Does anybody want a partner that doesn't have one yet? Yes, one person. Anybody else? Okay, if you over here, there's a woman in the white sweater and man in the yellow shirt in the front. Perfect. Anybody else? Okay. And who's? Is anybody journaling? Two people. Okay. So I'll describe both. So if you're journaling, what you'll do is you'll write down the question. One more person needs a partner. Yes? Oh, good. We have a partner for you. Perfect. Okay, so if you're journaling, you write the question down. I'll give it to you in a second. And then we're going to take 5 minutes each to answer the question. So you'll have 5 minutes to write your answer over and over and over and over again. Does that make sense? So it's the same question, and you're gonna like talk to yourself basically and write your response over and over and over again in the time allotted. So you just won't be saying it out loud, but you'll be writing it down. So then you ask yourself the question that you have written down, write the answer. Ask yourself the question, write the answer. Does that make sense? And so that's actually kind of good to know in case you want to do this at home by yourself. So for those of us that are speaking it, a couple components of this that I want to bring in. One is that there are two activities going on here, depending on whether you're the speaker or the listener. And for both of us, both of you, there's something that I want you to focus on. So the person that's asking the question is going to say the question, and then listen to the response. And that response is going to be as long as you, the person that's answering or responding, wants it to be. It could be a sentence, it could be a word, it doesn't matter. And then when your partner that's responding is done, you say thank you, and you ask it again, and your partner will respond as long or short as they want, and then you say thank you, and you ask it again. The person that's asking the question isn't going to be engaging verbally with the person responding. In other words, you're not going to be saying, oh yeah, I know what you mean. And that also goes for the visual language that we employ, okay? Because what I'd like you to do as the person asking the question is to practice listening and receiving. Like when we opened our eyes and we received, but we were still able to check in internally, you're going to be listening, and I want you to check in internally as much as you can and notice your internal response to what your partner is saying. Okay? Now, the person that's responding to the question, don't edit, just say whatever you can. And as you're speaking your response, you're speaking and you're internally aware of what that feels like to be saying what you're saying. Where are you sensing it? Is there any tightness? Same for both of us, but or both parties. Is there tightness? Is there sensation somewhere? What's going on with the breath? Now, this is kind of like rubbing your belly and patting your... I can't really do that. Patting your head and rubbing your belly. It's like juggling. It's a lot. So don't worry if you drop all those balls. But try to do your best to be internally aware as you're either speaking or listening. Because this is the skill that I want you to try to walk out with. Or at least have a taste of so that you can continue to practice it. Because it's a great skill, especially with something like anxiety. And we can talk about it afterwards. So does that make sense? Okay, great. So... okay, so here's the question, the first question that we're going to ask each other, and we're going to do this, you're going to do it for 5 minutes, and then the bell will go off, and then we're going to sit in silence for a moment, okay? So, I think I've given you all the instructions that I need to. Okay, so the question is, what brings you great joy? So don't change the question, just say it. What brings you great joy? You can use whatever intonation you like, but don't change the words. What brings you great joy? Okay? Okay, and then let's gather back as a group. So if you want to find, you can thank your partner. Not in your control.
Switch back one. Yes,
okay.
Again.
Should we? Is it not? It doesn't have anything to do with the mic, huh?
No. It's
okay. Yeah, that's all right. You're doing. Thank you for being so flexible. Okay. So, do we have a mic holder? Okay. A tissue holder. Thank you. Without sharing anything personal about what your partner shared, please do share about your own experience in either speaking or listening And, you know, you can talk about the contrast between the two questions or one question or whatever you want. But we'll bring this into our collective for a few minutes, please. So just make sure you have the mic, yeah?
So when my partner said something that resonated with me, I felt like a tingling in my heart and stomach area.
Uh-huh. That's fantastic. Great. Thank you.
So I noticed more...
Can you pull that a little closer to you?
Yeah. I think it was enlightening. The process of it was enlightening for me because I noticed the pattern. So what I shared with my partner was that I have a lot of self-imposed expectations on what I should be doing.
Uh-huh.
And I tend to function, I believe that I tend to function at my best when I'm on the go, when uh-huh. I'm acting, when I'm doing. So it was, my body was actually more tense, listening and just uh-huh. sitting there uh-huh. as opposed to me speaking.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because now that I think about it, that's usually how I function.
Yes.
When sitting back and just letting things happen, when it's not in my control, it's hard for me. But when I'm doing and acting, that's when I'm settled.
Interesting.
So it was interesting to see that. Yeah.
Does anybody relate to that? Yeah. Yeah. You know, that is quite interesting because we are in action so much. And which doesn't necessarily mean we're in control, A. And B, that the art of listening and receiving is something that we can cultivate and learn. So did anybody else sense that that receiving whatever your partner was saying without responding was difficult, without doing anything around it was difficult? You know, I mean, it's just, it's new. I mean, the listening, the deep listening practices are beautiful in that they will give us that quality because we don't even realize how busy we are when someone's speaking to us, how we're even, maybe even answering or finishing their sentence and deciding what they're going to say or who they are before we even know. So that's really great awareness, really good insight. Thank you. And then we have up here and here.
I have to say I'm still buzzing from the experience. I think listening was a beautiful thing, but the breath we had after, my lips were numb in the first question. Mm. And my head was vibrating in such a beautiful way. I think in the beginning of the listening, my initial challenge was to not compare it to myself. Because there were actually a lot of things in common that I connected with also. But then to sit back and just listen, I think that's what I felt so strongly when we were finished. Yeah. Mm. It's beautiful.
Thank you. You want to pass it up?
Hi.
Yeah, you kind of have to hold it close.
Oh, Riley Clip, okay. For me, I was the receiver first, and so I actually found the act of saying thank you to be really huge. And I really had to connect with gratitude for the words thank you. And then I had to breathe. Yeah. And then I actually had to restate the question. And that, for me, was an exercise unto itself as well. So, because otherwise I would feel myself disconnecting from that actual process, which means I wasn't going to reconnect with my partner if I actually didn't connect with those words.
Fantastic. Great awareness.
And then the process of actually being asked that question, it gave me a way to connect with myself that I didn't even know. Mm-hmm. And going through the I don't know and the anger, you know, in the micro moments, and then then some other level is revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's gorgeous what you're saying. I mean, the micro moments are also quite interesting. I mean, first of all, just the act of gratitude and connection so that we don't disconnect is, wow, that's a lifelong continuation, isn't it? And then the micro moments are, you know, when we can see, you know, experience on a granular level, like you're saying, that intense awareness allows us to see the beginning and end. That's titration in minutia, in a way. And does that make sense, how that's titration in minutia? That's titration, just one moment, one second at a time. I can take it now, and then I see it passes, right? Like the anger came and went, yeah? And it's really a beautiful expression of impermanence.
And then there was,
or an expression of impermanence, you know, maybe not beautiful.
And then there was like, oh, there's the joy of being asked this question and being, I can hear myself. Can I hear myself?
Yeah. And then there's that. You know, I mean, there's just like so many layers to mine in this practice. Yeah, great. Thank you. Anyone else want to share?
I just want to touch on the micro moments, mm-hmm. through having the conversation, well, not conversation, but the back and forth with my partner. I realized that I don't identify the moments, I don't name the moments as much as it's giving me joy. Like just pausing to say, oh, you know, this feels good, or this gives me joy. Like I'm already on to the next moment.
Yeah.
And just pausing in between those moments to actually identify them,
mm-hmm.
I think goes back to what you had said earlier about repeated behavior,
mm-hmm.
Patterns, or the way we choose to label,
mm-hmm.
and just to remind ourselves that that gave me joy in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that my partner gave me was awareness. Now that I'm a mother and I have two kids, one's a teenager, and she has graduated and she is on, it's a reflection of what brings a child joy, if that makes any sense, when you're with someone who is younger and you're nurturing your own child, you realize that you perhaps get in the way of their joy because their joy is your joy, and you've got this back and forth as a parent and a child, and confusion to where the joy should lie. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of nuance in there. But I mean, just noticing and naming and sensing all the things that you just spoke about is something that you'll walk out with and continue to notice and be with in lots of different ways. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I'm picking up on what you said that I think is especially interesting is how symbiotic we are. you know, your daughter's joy, your joy, you know, where does one end and the other begin? And I think that there's a lot of that that we don't necessarily bring forward into our aware, you know, into our conscious awareness so much. We don't even feel that as much as we could. And so, you know, sensing someone else's joy is joyful. You know, that's mudita. Appreciating someone else's happiness and joy and good fortune is one of the you know, factors of awakening. It's a beautiful moment, special. And it really helps us to be aware of how connected and interdependent we really are. Yeah. So a lot of great continuation in what you said. You want to share something?
Yeah.
Please.
Yes, just something I noticed on the kind of expansive and timeless nature of joy. There was the temporal joy of being in the situation with my partner who's been vibrating behind me very kindly. And to face her in the moment was just, I mean, I love this practice, right? And so there was that joy. And then the joy of the place that I was in Morocco last week that I brought to myself, but also an ancestral joy. Something came up, you know, there's like culturally received trauma, but it was a culturally received joy that came up in the moment, right? Yeah. And so it just, as I have been reflecting on it, it's like, okay, yay, right? Because there's that too sometimes. Yeah. But also how all those various times of joy are just kind of one big mass of joy. And it was beautiful to kind of unwittingly connect to a kind of received ancestral joy.
Mm, mm, beautiful.
And happy to receive it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is joy. Mm-hmm. We forget that. Mm-hmm. And there is goodness. And there are moments of peace and ease. There's still kindness. There is a lot of sanity still around. A lot of it's right here. So I think it's important for us to highlight all these things, to recognize them, to pause and absorb and assimilate, however that manifests, you know, because we tend to forget those moments very easily. Thank you. Well, there was one more thing that I wanted to try, but we've sort of run out of time, unfortunately. Please. So we have time for more sharing.
I'm sorry.
Don't be.
In the litany, when I was responding to what blocks joy or...
Stands
it was a litany of my own faults and it was... I'm kind of envious of other people's experiences. It was much more joyful to hear my partner's responses than to... It just felt like, oh my God, yeah, it's all my fault.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay. Yeah, anybody else feel something similar from one at one moment or another? When she was talking about what stands in the way, stands in the way of her joy, it was a whole litany of reasons, you know, things, but they were all self-induced. Am I saying that correctly? So that she felt a lot of blame. And that's unpleasant. And so there's that aspect of it. And then also feeling like, well, you know, everybody else, it was easier to hear everybody else's than her own. Yeah. Self-criticism is an art form not many are qualified to practice. I want to say that again because, you know, I think a lot of our anxiety, our depression, our doubt, our resentment, our worry, our fear is magnified by the critic or the critics that we have inside. And those critics are like bullies. They're our own internal bullies. And those bullies we didn't invent. Usually they were passed to us some way or another. And it bullies and feelings and even the harsher thoughts that we have, the even the sensations sometimes that are represent them, all want to be heard and given some respect, even pain, you know. Pain wants us to listen to it. And if we listen to pain, whether it's physical, emotional, or mental, it can ease a little bit. Doesn't feel like it has to yell so loudly. So there's one story that I'll tell you that, and to know also, just to know that that's not uncommon. It's not uncommon. And kindness is not a given. Compassion is not a given. It's something that we can cultivate. And it might take time. There's a story that one of my teachers used to tell, use this as a metaphor. It might work in response to what you're saying. And he would say, you know, like you're sitting there and you're about to meditate and you have the perfect pashmina shawl and just the right Japanese incense and, you know, the cushion that you ordered from Dharma Crafts or wherever it's from. And you're all set up and you're ready to meditate and close your eyes. And all of a sudden, there's this bully that you hear at your door. And the bully is really the thought, the fear, the emotion, the sensation that you don't want. You know, leave me alone. But the bully is at your door and it's starting to knock. Like, go away. And it starts to pound and you're like, oh no, this is going to, you know, this is this critic, this bully, this feeling, this thought, this sensation. Get the heck out of here. I'm trying to meditate. You know, don't ruin my meditation. Well, so you're pushing it away, not listening, and the bully gets louder at the door. He said, okay, let the bully in. You go to the door. You really don't want to let this bully in, but you open the door, and this is like the critic, the strong emotion, the uncomfortable physical sensation, and you open the door, and you know what's on the other side. And so you open the door, and you look at it, you greet it, and you say, hey, how are you? No thanks, not right now. And you quietly close the door, and you go back. And there's a lot in that little story. And some of the things that I got for that from that story, and I heard this probably 20 years ago, and it just really impacted me, was, if we push away, or, you know, and judgment and criticism is a form, it's so uncomfortable that we don't want to hear it. And if we don't listen to it and acknowledge it, it's like the bully. It's going to just keep talking to us and going to say it louder, and it's going to say it again, and it's going to say it again until it feels heard. Well, recognition is listening to it and not pushing it away. Acknowledging, okay, bully. Okay, critic. Thanks. No thank you, not right now. And then turning towards something else. But we have to listen to it for a moment, acknowledge it, recognize it, and then say no thank you, which is a little bit of taking it in with some kindness, not anger, because the anger will just contract, you know, and hold it in a little bit longer. And then close the door and turn towards something else. So this repetitive type of practice is what we need to do over and over and over again for those, what my teacher Ajahn Amar used to call committee members, that were reminding us how awful we are, how much we fail, how I've told you this a bazillion times and you're still doing it. You know, that voice is that you acknowledge it, recognize it. You don't have to like it. No one says that, okay? That's not in any of the Dharma. It's not about liking it, but it's acknowledge, recognize, and then say, hey, you know what? No thanks. And go to a voice that you want to hear. And you have to just keep doing it over and over. So my suggestion is, because we all have that condemnation, self-critical, blame, voice or two or three within us, and it's really just about repetition, acknowledging them, it, however it manifests, and saying, I hear you, no thanks. I hear you again, no thanks. Hi, I hear you again, no thank you. As much as possible, as many times as possible. Because that's what, it's the acknowledgement that'll start to quiet it down. And then the turning towards, like we were talking about with the peg, you're taking the smaller peg and no thank you, not right now, no thank you, not right now, no thank you, not right now, until you knock it out, right? But it's not done with anger or resentment, and I know that's a little tricky sometimes, but as much as we possibly can, it's like, okay, not right now, not right now. So just continue on that, because I know I was brought up to be very self-critical. And it took me a while to, first of all, acknowledge, and then to let those guys go. And I really appreciate your saying that, because that is a difficult... Those are insidious, very deep voices, and I think good for you for saying it out loud and for coming back. To something that's a little bit softer each time you hear it. Yeah, it's not so much about eradication of anything, but, you know, we can turn our mind towards, we can allow our mind to listen and know the language of the body and work through the language of the body by pulling down out of the discursive thinking mind and into the manifestations of the discursive thinking mind in the body, bring in the breeze, visualize light, somehow manifest softness, take a pause. In any of the different ways that we experienced together today, and we just need to do it over and over again, because if it's held in just conceptual mind, it's not going to help you. But just as these habits of thinking, and that's all they are, they're habits, have conditioned us over time, or we've been conditioned by them, or we are that conditioning, however you want to look at it, we can decondition, maybe not eradicate, but decondition. It takes some patience. It takes some persistence, repetition, reminding ourselves and each other. That's why Sangha is important. Community is really super important. And just remembering that, yeah, there is still goodness. There is still joy. There is still beauty. There is still sanity. And looking for that as much as we allow the negativity bias to sometimes take hold. And also, I think it's important to remember that usually what we fear hasn't happened. And so if you think you don't have imagination and you have anxiety, then I want you to remember that you do have imagination, because a lot of times what you're fearing is something that you're imagining to be real. And it's not true. So use the imagination of what's going to happen in the future, what you think might be happening in the future. Use your imagination to create a landscape where that's not happening in one way or another. Use your heart as your guide and your imagination to picture what would be a different scenario, or what is actually, bring the conscious awareness into what is actually happening right now. And just keep remembering how to come into the body, into the present moment, how to soften and be with the moments that we have, that we really do have, and that is just this one. Oh yeah, just this one. Oh yeah, and then there's now. Over and over and over again. You know, I want to really thank you for coming and spending a day on anxiety. Because, I mean, maybe when you signed up, you thought, can I do this? Do I want to do this? Hopefully there was one aspect of this practice, the practices that we did together, that was helpful to you and that you can take home. And what I'd like to offer you is a follow-up. If you would like to, let me know how these practices land with you in a couple of weeks. I want to offer you a 15-minute or so conversation, consultation about what worked and what didn't and how you might follow through or up on these things if you want to take me up on it. And what I would ask is that you do one of these practices, at least one, for 2 weeks. Try it on. And then email me. We'll set up a time to talk. 15 or so minutes. Sometimes it takes a little more time. And I'm happy to give you more time if I have it, for sure. But I want to hear from you. I don't want this to be a touch and a go thing. But I want to hear from you. I want to know what works, what doesn't work so well. And I want you to know that we have a thread so that I'm not just throwing these things out at you, you know, and letting you go into a sea of, you know, whatever you want. But I am here sometimes in person in New York. You know, I'm here fairly frequently now, always online and telephone. And so it is important to me to hear from you. I do want to know how these work and maybe when they don't. And I do want to support you because anxiety is a tough one, something that we all feel from time to time. And certainly in its acute form is nothing to laugh at. So if I can support you in any way I want to, you just need to be in touch with me. And other than that, I really, really appreciate your time and you know, coming and giving up a Sunday. I saw a lot of you I know, but a lot of you I don't know yet. So, I, you know, there was a little bit of faith going on to come and try someone new and something new. So I'm very grateful. It's good to be home and with you, and I hope that I see you again. So thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.